What's that about?
What's that noise?
No, I'm eating some popcorn. I got a burnt one, you know?
Did you do the kernels or did you do the microwave Johns?
Yeah, just the microwave. But it is...
I've grown to re-like it again.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. The old kernel way is still better.
Yeah.
Like the movie theater
pot.
Popcorn.
You got to do the copper pot. It's the way.
Yes.
It's the only way.
Chester Copper Pot.
He's the guy.
He's the guy. He did it. But yeah, sometimes the microwave convenience is all I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But yes, I do. Especially when you worked at a movie theater for this, like just being able to get like free popcorn all day and
it's dangerous.
Test out different seasonings on it. Oh yeah. That's one of the few perks.
Well, it's like that in Pittsburgh popcorn with all the sweets too.
Yeah. That I cannot argue with it.
There are a few who can.
That's just true.
Me, I'm just pulling up the old information to back my research.
Mm-hmm.
I never trust myself. But man, there are a lot of characters in this game, I'll tell you. That's why I was like, I should probably pull up the character list because there's a lot going on with this one.
So what are we? So yeah, what are we?
I figured I was kind of following
horror,
a bit of our formula
escapade today.
Yeah, I was following a bit of our formula from last year. I was trying fit a bit of a mold, as it were. And
let me stop you there. We have no formula. That's number one. I just want everyone out there to know there is nothing going on behind
the scenes.
There's
no sanity to this madness.
There is not.
But yeah, I remembered we threw some games in there last year. I was like, this one stuck in my head, especially because we had talked Last of Us. But we also we talked a bit of Resident Evil as well. And I was like, this is kind of like the modern Resident Evil in a way. Like not quite the same. Like it's not really a monster thing. It's more of like a insane asylum. Almost, and towards the end, it's a bit of a ghost story, not to get ahead and spoil ourselves too much. But it's an interesting one. And it came out right around the same time that the first Last of Us originally had. And it came into that space where like gameplay watch throughs were starting to really become big. They had been around for a minute. Yeah. But like they were gaining a lot of steam at this time and like a ton of people were catching on and watching them.
Yeah, so this says 2013 this was released. Right around
when, it was like I think Markiplier and PewDiePie did playthroughs on this, and then it the popularity of this game after that, those two guys did it, it like blew up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a cool, really cool story. It's, I think for me personally, the sound design and the music are like the big standouts because it's like one of the creepiest horror soundtracks I've ever heard.
Well, yeah. And we've talked before, especially in horror, but in video games, your sound design, or just sound in general, when you're dealing with mediums like movies, video games, your sound's got to be
top notch
or else the final product will suffer.
Yeah, it's like you can even have like relatively par cinematography, like visuals, if it's a video game, movie, whatever, you know. But like I think we've talked before, like the Spielberg sense, like sound has to be like front and center. It's like, yes. I think horror, it's a special because like that's where a lot of the terrors come from.
Oh yeah, it comes from sound. Yeah, I mean, so many things just in, you know, just when you're out experiencing, like, you know, if you're just kind of walking around and just like you hear random noises, you're like, what the hell was that? You know,
yeah,
it's one of your first senses that you tend to interact with.
Well, it's also, it can sit on the back burner, what's in the front of your mind too, because it's like, you know, it can kind of bubble behind the surface and you can't like quite pick up what's unnerving you at first. I think I think that's one of the superpowers of sound, is it can kind of hide in the background.
No, absolutely.
But yeah, this game particularly, it was so powerful because of its simplicity. Like the story was very complex and like the asylum itself was very complex. But as far as like the mechanics and the playability of it, it was incredibly simple and easy to just slip right in and go through it and play through it like in one quick go.
And I will admit, I've not played it. I've actually never even heard of it until you brought it up for the episode.
Really? That actually surprises me because I'm pretty sure I've talked about this one quite a bit.
Until you have introduced me to it. Like, I had no notion of it, but it looks, I mean, I gotta say, it sounds and looks pretty interesting.
It's kind of become a franchise since that, too. And they've made two, like, full games. But after, like, the huge popularity of the first game, they did a downloadable, like, a DLC, as they call it, which honestly basically was a prequel game. It was almost as long as the original game, so they essentially made a sequel in a download. So that, I thought that was kind of interesting. I think it's called Outlast Whistleblower, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
I think now if you buy the core game, you get Whistleblower as like an add-on for free.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting that it's like, I would like, it was such a unique DLC because like usually every DLCs are super stingy and like money milling. It's like, oh, they just for like, I think it was like a very nominal fee at the time. They just gave you an entirely additional game. I was like, that's kind of awesome.
Which is, I think great. I think most recently, I think the newest God of War did something like that.
Yeah.
Like a completely free DLC.
That's pretty cool.
Like extends, you know, goes more into the character of Kratos and stuff like that. But yeah, it's similar to what you're talking about here.
Yeah. So let's get into it a little bit because this is kind of a wild one.
Yeah. Yeah.
The story is you're an investigative journalist who gets a tip.
Which I love, by the way, the fact that, sorry, I just wanted to.
No, absolutely.
I love that. It's, I love the notion of the investigative journalist because like off the bat, you know, we've talked about it a little bit before in the past, like video games. You know, you're always used to those, like having those superpowered characters, which are great. In this one, yeah, it's more realistic, more like we're putting you in a sort of everyday person role here. This is a more normal person that you can relate to, doesn't have superpowers, going into an unknown situation.
Continue. Well, I think you and I have talked about this before as far as like horror is concerned. Some of the best horror comes out of investigative journalism. I think, you know,
yeah,
The Ring is a great example. Rachel is like such a good character because she's like digging in and she's essentially digging her own hole with this whole thing, even though she's already in it. But like also like it's from the perspective of like it's kind of a detective story without being a cop. So it's like you're taking your detective and stripping them of the necessary, you know, skills to survive.
Yeah.
So it's I think that there's something really interesting in that.
No, but, absolutely. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in this particular case, I mean, because you like it's kind of like Halo syndrome. They put you so much in the driver's seat of that main character that like a lot of their entity is kind of stripped away.
Yeah. It's that blank slate.
Yeah, Miles. Character. The main character's name is Miles Upshur. But yeah, so they kind of throw you
Miles,
in.
Miles, what are you doing?
What are you doing here, man? Like, shit. Yeah, like it's too because like you're rolling up in like it's kind of just throws you into it in that first sequence. It's like you just hear the radio playing over the studio titles coming over like the top of the game, and then it's like you're just in the Jeep rolling up to this Murkoff Corporation asylum already, and like so it's like one of those situations is like from the word go you're in it, and it's like you walk right, you have no choice but to like leave, to your only like quote unquote weapon or device is this kind of the gimmick of Outlast is this the camcorder that has night vision. So it's like instead of like collecting ammo, you're collecting batteries for the camera the whole time. That's kind of like the mechanic gimmick.
Yeah, which I haven't played the game, but I watched like, you know, playthroughs of it. Interesting that you mentioned that this was one of the first ones that made it a more popular thing to do, watching the playthroughs on other people playing the video games. It reminds that camera aspect reminds me a lot of another horror video game, which I think is great, which we can maybe talk about in the future. Fatal Frame uses a first person, well, kind of a third first person mix, but you use a camera instead of batteries. You're getting film. That's your sort of, you know, gun and ammo way of, you know, battling.
Yeah, I've heard you mention this one before, and you color me intrigued for sure.
Yeah, but anyway, continue.
So yeah, as Miles Upshur, you start, you know, you go on this anonymous tip that there's something of intrigue. You can read the whole file at the very start of the game as before you leave the Jeep. And it's what's cool is there's like that collection aspect to it too. Like there was an old PC Titanic game that had an element of this where it's like it was a time travel aspect to that one where it's like you went back in time and you were like trying to find a specific person to save them from the Titanic sinking. And like you're collecting documents and information the whole time. And I like that kind of style of game. We've mentioned before about Last of Us that was one of the things that intrigued me because like a lot of the storytelling was just in the collectibles and like reading letters.
Yes.
So like there's a really cool aspect of that to this.
Which is unique to video games, I feel, or that medium. It'd be very hard to do that in a movie, in a TV show, in a book. I mean, you can kind of get it in a book, but you don't have that same
element of discovery.
That element of discovery, exactly, like you did in Last of Us or in this, and finding, you know, if you want more of the story, if you want more of the lore, you know, you're rewarded by your exploration and, you know, picking apart the puzzles and corners of the game.
it's trickier to make that personal in something that's, unless it's like a choose your own adventure book, but it's like as far as like film or TV, it's pretty tricky to pull that off.
Yeah.
But and then you're kind of just building and building towards like finding out that this asylum is not like a normal place at all. And it's just like, there's some bad crazy stuff going on here. And it's like, you feel like once you walk in, like the front door is closed and you're trying to just kind of like sneak in, like being like a cagey investigative journalist, trying to just, you know, get the information and get the hell out of there is the idea. And Miles like sneaks in through the side after like the front door is sealed up, locked up tight. And before you know it, you're kind of trapped in this asylum, and like you realize that all hell has broken loose in this place. Something terrible is going on. There's like, you know, all kinds of evidence of chaos, but it's like you haven't, like one of the creepiest parts of the game for me is like you don't really see a person until a few minutes in. So it's,
yeah,
you're just like walking through this terrifying like vacant asylum, and before you know it, you're just trapped in it, and the goal is to like get out after a certain point. But yeah, like, there's like these iconic characters in it that just emerge throughout the course of it. And what's really cool for me about the DLC is the DLC as a prequel, kind of like the two events kind of like take place over the same span of time, but it's like the prequel like takes place before. It turns out that the character that you're playing in the prequel is the one who sends Miles the anonymous tip. Spoiler.
Okay.
But I mean, it's kind of a given from the word go. It's not a super spoiler, but yeah, the whistleblower game DLC kind of like bookends the original game. So it's like before and after. And that's so pretty, like, yeah, it's kind of cool because it gives you like a before and after, like you get that before perspective. So like you're getting a deeper understanding of what went wrong. And then you kind of get to see behind the ending of the original game a little bit, which is also kind of cool. But yeah, there's a lot of like really iconic like horror characters that they present in this. The penultimate in the third act obviously being the coolest. Like they definitely save the coolest sequence for last. But the main driving force character is Chris Walker. All these asylum members are like just completely demented, like have no sense of sanity left in their brains. Like they're just out to like mess with people and kill, and it's utterly terrifying. The doctor especially is horrifying. Like there's a sequence where the doctor actually captures Miles and you wake up like tied to a chair, and I won't spoil too much what happens with that, but it is very, very horrifying, and it completely catches you off guard.
And this is a strictly first person view, correct?
Yeah, it does not go back to the third person, and it's like kind of like the camera is just like an overlay to your standard view, but like there are very long stretches of the game that are borderline pitch dark. You can't make it through the game without utilizing the camera.
Okay, wow.
You have to be kind of strategic in how you use it sometimes so you don't burn through the batteries. But, and like, obviously, the more intense difficulty levels of the game, the batteries are rarer. You kind of have to be more heavily strategic with how and when you use it. But, so it's like a lot of like puzzle style stuff. You got to like avoid Proctor characters like looking for you in hallways and stuff. Yeah. And there's like closed loop situations where you kind of got to dodge around them, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah. And that's interesting to know that, you know, we've talked about it before, where when you're writing the story to a game, I feel for me, a story would come first just because that's what I'm used to. But I feel like with the game, the gameplay mechanic of it would have to come first, or at the very least, they have to be born simultaneously. Like,
yeah.
And to me, having just watched, you know, some of the gameplay and listening to what you're saying, it sounds like they did a good job at knowing like, okay, this, you know, that camera aspect to it is key to how you're going to interact and play the game, but also digest the story and the world around you.
Yeah. As we mentioned before, it's like it's a psychological horror. It's a survival horror. There's elements of corporate greed with the Murkoff Corporation. It's like we mentioned, I think, last week in Urban Legend, talking about in horror, the idea of like the exposure fear. So a lot of the times, like the antagonist characters are their goal is to prevent the protagonist from exposing the misdeeds or evil doings.
Yeah, the secret. Yeah.
So it's like the exposure is the big threat for the antagonist. And like a lot of the times, like the main character won't necessarily make it out alive, but they'll be able to expose the antagonist so the world can come to the rescue, kind of an idea. And this is definitely like it's a very prevalent element in Outlast, and both Outlast and even more so in Whistleblower, I would say.
It's in the title with Whistleblower as well.
Yeah, like it's very prevalent because the additional character that they present, like their entire goal is like, because one element that's like left on the table with the ending of Outlast, to get ahead, obviously spoilers, Miles does not make it out alive. He actually ends up becoming the wall rider that we come to learn. I'll describe more of what the Wall Rider is later. Mm-hmm. But he ends up becoming the Wall Rider and fighting his way out to simply survive capture is the idea. Yeah. And we get hints of what the Wall Rider is throughout the entirety. Like, I think it's like after like the first like major checkpoint in the earlier portion of the game, you see written in blood on the wall talking about the Wall Rider and where is the Wall Rider, who is the Wall Rider, all these kind of things like scattered throughout the walls over the course of the game. There's like SWAT teams that have been like completely dismembered that doesn't even look physically possible for a person to have done it to like a large group like this. So it's like a lot of like crazy questions like how is that even possible kind of stuff. And the Murkoff Corporation has clearly been up to some crazy like misdeeds in science. We had mentioned the Dr. Richard Traeger, the psychopath who's like completely bugged out of his mind and he's like just tearing people up. Like it's like the asylum is completely eating itself from the inside because like there is a, like a foreign entity driving the insanity up. It's not necessarily even like just the people in there were crazy. It's like there is a foreign entity like amping up the crazy surrounding everyone.
There is an agitator essentially to it.
Yeah, and we come to learn that it is this Wall Rider. And as we get deeper and deeper into it, we learn that there's been all kinds of experiments trying to bring about the Wall Rider, and like we get more and more understanding of what it is. Eventually we realize that the main goal of the Murkoff Corporation has been trying to bridge the gap. I'm just gonna like give like the secret away now. They've been trying
to bridge
the gap between basically what is the afterlife, between the ghost plane, as it were. Like they're essentially trying to make a sentient ghost, and that's what the Wall Rider is.
Okay.
They're like kind of like a transient version of a human being that has kind of like ascended into like the ghost plane, like without actually dying. So it's like they're like crazy superpowered because they're not actually dead.
So it's kind of like a best of both worlds.
Yeah. And you find out like the test subject that they actually like turned into the Wall Rider is basically in like a glass ball still being held in suspension alive.
Uh-huh.
So like one of the main like points of the final portion of the game is you're like trying to like terminate them so the Wall Rider can't actually kill you as Miles. Excuse me. Oh my gosh. Ouch.
Oof. Don't. What was that?
I had McDonald's today. That's what that was.
No, they don't. They usually don't give that out in asylums.
Yeah, it's cruel and unusual. But so like yeah, all these crazy characters, all these crazy threads. You are just kind of like in like every sense of the word thrust into the insane asylum. Like they really and like it's all these. You get like these really terrifying sequences of like these characters just like mocking you in the most insane ways. Like. I'm trying to think of some of the terms that they use because like I remember Markiplier would always bring them up in his playthroughs and like I think like Chris Walker would call like different victims like Little Piggy and stuff, just like really demented and like just like really like amped up the terror like of trying like of them chasing you through the hallways of the asylum and stuff, just like and like especially too like there's little places to hide, so it's like looking through the night vision camera like under a bed as like some crazed like borderline non-human like just rummages through the room looking to kill you is just beyond the words of terror.
Well, and I think too just the natural setting of an asylum is in and of itself has become for us in our modern day there's a horror aspect tied to it, and not for like lack of you know of us understanding what an asylum is, but you know there was a lot of history before you know modern mental health you know practices, medicine, psychiatric care that we have today, you know, before it was kind of just like a place to throw people that you didn't really want around in society. And because I think one of the oldest lunatic asylums, or what we would consider lunatic asylums, is I want to say from the early Middle Ages, maybe like the 600 AD. I am pulling this one completely out of my ass here, but okay. I swear to God, I remember reading something like that. But anyway, one thing I think that's kind of just a fun little fact here, the word bedlam, you know, if you ever, you know, when someone says bedlam, it means like, you know, noise and confusion, actually comes from an English asylum, like Bethlehem Asylum.
Oh, I did not know that.
From like, yeah, an old one. I think it was one of the first asylums in England. We're talking like from like the middle ages, you know, up to like, you know, through the 1800s. And it just eventually the word just morphed and they, instead of calling it Bethlehem Asylum or something like that, they called it Bedlam. And then Bedlam Asylum, and that's where, when you hear someone say the term Bedlam, that's where it comes from.
Interesting.
Yes, but an interesting story, like worth looking up more on, like asylums, like actual asylums in history.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the formation of Red Barrels was kind of fascinating to watch, too, because this was kind of the game that broke that studio into reality.
I had never heard of this studio before.
This and the sequel are, like, their main claims to fame. They've done some small things aside from it, but, like, those are, like, they're big, heavy hitters. I think they did a number of mobile games, if memory serves, but, like, this is their big thing. Two, it was, like, their composer who came in and did this was Samuel L. Flem. He also just recently did a horror movie, and it was also good. Like, he's part of what makes the game so good, in my personal opinion. Like, just has that, like, he uses those, like, echoey, just, like, weird tones of, like, cranking, like, weird gears and stuff and, like, dragging things over metal parts and stuff. Like, the weird kind of instruments that, like, you just have to get in an experiment with, and you can't even really describe them to anybody. They're just, like, through pure experimentation.
Well, there goes back to that quality of sound, especially when you're dealing in the dark, you know. When it's dark out, you're... this sense that a lot of us tend to rely on the most, being sight, is hindered, if not completely gone. You can't see anything. So you have to start relying on touch.
Sound is like the indication of what might be in the dark. Sound is like,
can't see it. And without having the reference, you know, your mind starts to fill in the gaps.
Yeah. And it can be really effective. And it's beautifully illustrated in this game how powerful that can be.
I got to quit eating this popcorn. Keep going.
How much you make?
Just a bag, just a small, like,
just a single bag, just a feed bag, you know, nothing crazy. Mm-hmm.
You know, a little, I have like a trough in front of me and I just pour it out and I just, like, I'm not even using my hands. I'm just kind of dipping my head below the mic.
Yeah. Partly what I loved about this game too was, like, kind of like how we were talking about Resident Evil last year. It's like, it uses small spaces incredibly effectively.
Yes. 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 100% agreed. Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of doubling back. It's like the asylum itself is not a very large structure, a very large place, but I think there's five different stories, five different levels of this building that you venture into. And there's like a base, there's like the sewery kind of basement, then there's like the Murkoff research facility basement. There's like very distinctive, like very well formed and very like intentionally iconic like areas that are like very visually separate from one another.
One thing too, you talk about the levels of it, and I'm going off of just what I've seen, but even one thing that I think that this gets even a little bit better than Resident Evil, at least the original one, is from what I could tell, the building makes sense in the way that it's laid out. Like,
yeah, for as like fantastical as it can get, because it does like go to some very non-real places, it feels still grounded and possible.
Like I'm trying to figure out how I can put this, in the sense of like when you think of dungeons in Elder Scrolls video games.
Yeah.
The dungeons, the practicality of some of them, or like, you know, when you compare them to like a castle in real life, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have these long meandering hallways that go essentially to nowhere.
Yeah.
So that's something that I think, even like the original mansion in the first Resident Evil, there's some rooms that it's like, what did this room serve its purpose for exactly? It, you know, even though it still is pretty good, I would say Outlast, from what I could see, took the time to say, okay, let's make sure that this would actually almost function as if it were a true asylum. So I'm wondering if they did their research and looked at, you know, actual asylums, you know, throughout history.
Yeah, and like that goes back to like we were saying, like these iconic characters. There's Eddie Gluskin with it. Like each one like finds a different kind of way to unnerve you. Like Eddie Gluskin is known as, within the game, the Groom, and his own personal goal is to trap and marry you. And that, like, the sexual unnerving of that is beyond
I mean, words. I shouldn't laugh at it, but still,
no, it's absolutely laughable at points in the game, because, like, some of the commentary that he says to Miles, like, and how he's after him is, like, so beyond demented. It's just, you can't do anything but laugh because it's so unsettling. And then, like we were saying about Chris Walker is like the pain, you know, fear. He's like, he's going to bludgeon you into nothing because he just wants to kill you. There's no other motivation there. He just wants you to die. And there's the brothers who don't even say one word. They just stalk you through like a series of cages. And they're almost more terrifying than anything because you can't like full, like we've said about, you know, Michael Myers and other type characters, like you can't fully discern their motivations. They're just clearly after you.
Well, it's nice too to like see that taking the time to give you that variety of enemies, not just a variety of enemies in a game, but distinctive personalities to the challenges and characters that you will have to encounter throughout the gameplay. Because, you know, that's, I think that's something some people we tend to forget now when we're playing games. But even with like modern graphics, you know, if you're just kind of playing, if you're always up against the same enemy the entire time,
gets mundane.
It can get mundane and boring. Even we talked about Resident Evil, there's a lot of zombies in it, but there are a variety of other enemies as well that go through it. Another, like a Left 4 Dead, another zombie game.
I love those
games.
One of the things I think
that makes that a little bit, you know, took the genre, did something, went back to something that had been done a lot and said, well, okay, how can we change this? Adding different types of zombies, you know, like this one.
Yeah.
It was like, I think like a tank or the witch, and they all have different attributes. It's same with Last of Us. You have the clickers, you have the runners.
Yeah.
You know, that's a key thing, you know, again, it not only helps, you know, with the gameplay, but it allows you, if you want to tell a story, it helps enrich that the world that you're creating. So definitely something not to overlook, I think, is the enemy variety in a game.
Yeah.
Because it is both, one, huge to the mechanic of the game and keeping the interest of your player, but also it is a boon unto which you can really explore the story more, the narrative, if you want, in an interactive way where you don't have to have cutscenes just playing out.
Well, like even just like from a broader strokes beyond horror, it's like having your protagonist be forced to juggle multiple threats or multiple challenges at the same time makes them makes it more empathetic, I guess, makes it more interesting from the fact that like everybody can empathize with having to tackle multiple problems at once, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that there's just more intrigue there. One of my favorite shows of all time is Stargate, and they constantly just like bombard the protagonists of those series with like just multiple problems at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Almost more than any sane person can handle in those shows.
Well, it's key too, because like I'm thinking of like, you know, the boss battles in this, if you will.
Yeah.
It really helps to like, you don't always need to have like, you know, the original video games, and they had it where boss fights, you kind of only saw the boss at the very, very end. You know, you hadn't had any other notion yet of who they are when you look at like games back on like the original Nintendo and whatnot.
Yeah.
When you have something like this now, you get a little more sophistication. You're creating that story, and you're getting your protagonist and your antagonist, be it the arch antagonist or like, you know, lower level ones. When you finally get to that boss fight then with them, there's more, you can really amp up the fear too, you know, of like, oh man, I don't know how I'm gonna like, you know, take that down. One game that used to do this a lot really well for me was Metal Gear Solid back in the day, because you would know or hear about the bosses that you're gonna fight, the characters and what they can do. You would have limited interactions with them, the character would, but, and it was always kind of sort of like planting, you know, that seed in your mind of like, all right, how are you gonna take this guy down when you finally do meet them? Because you know it's that intense use of foreshadowing, which Outlast I think does here as well with the characters you've been describing.
Yeah, very, very much so. Nail on the head. There's so much to the, like, both, I call them three games because I really do consider the DLC kind of its own isolated game.
Mm-hmm.
The second Outlast is kind of like, it takes the anthology route. It's a very, like, its own story kind of thing, apart from Outlast and Whistleblower.
Yeah.
But still, like, it still has the same energy, the same kind of methodology of unfolding. So it is an interesting installment. But it was kind of like, they kind of built this whole world with the Asylum and the Murkoff Corporation. I think a lot of people wanted more of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do genuinely love that second game.
It's so funny how in narratives we love our greedy corporations and we love to hate them. But yeah,
Weyland-Yutani.
Weyland-Yutani, Umbrella, Markov, Ace Chemicals, Shinra. I'm trying to just think like off the top of my head of like big like InGen.
Yeah, you know? That's a great one. Yeah,
it's almost so ingrained into our modern storytelling. You know, this idea of the corrupt corporation, you know, it's something that's much more of a modern trope compared to, I mean, corruption has always been involved in storytelling in terms of that concept of it. Well, you look at even like ancient stories, but I would say the concept of a corrupt corporation is much more a modern trope that we really seem to, you know, eat up when it's done right.
Yeah, and there's a believability in modern society.
Oh yes, absolutely.
So I think that's a bit of where it comes from. It's like there is some of that in the real world, but it is interesting.
Tyrell,
yeah,
like a corporation. There's another one. Yeah, sorry, I'm just keep naming them off.
There's so many good ones. You're right. But yeah, like I genuinely love like the insane amount of layers to this game. Like there's so much going on. Every time you think you've gotten to the bottom of it, it's like there's more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And like you would think like, okay, it's one building, it's one asylum. How deep could it go? But it really does cover a crazy amount of ground. And it's like kind of like at that hornet's nest aspect to it with the wall rider driving all these already like predisposed like insanity types to like their maximum possible insanity. So it's like it's a bit of a haunted house kind of game in a lot of ways, but
yeah,
the way that its story unfolds makes it for like an incredibly good haunted house.
And that's always it's always a familiar thing, and I think everyone likes it's a thing that I always try to go by when you're creating something. And this, I didn't create this, I've read it in multiple books on writing, is familiar but fresh.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of the thing that you want to keep with, you know.
Well, it's like we've said before, it's like there's only so many, you know, stories. It's like finding a new way to tell something, a new combination, you know. There's ways.
It's very difficult to create something like wow, like out of this world, brand new, that no one's ever done before. Yeah. I can't even, off the top of my head, I don't even know if I've ever technically maybe ever even seen something or read something like that necessarily. I mean, maybe I have, but off the top of my head, I can't think of it. But yeah, so for lesser artists like myself and writers, we have to stick to that familiar but fresh. You got to take something that you know works, like the haunted house idea, genre, whatever you want to call it, and then be like, okay, what's my spin on this? How do I make this fresh again? How do I elevate it, as Gordon Ramsay would say with food? You know, elevate it. It's raw. Don't make it raw.
As far as our food metaphors go, I just want to see you go full Gordon Ramsay on something.
It's raw.
I guess one of his daughters just got married. Did you see that?
Did he? I did not know that.
Yeah, he posted some on the socials. It was interesting.
Interesting.
I was like, I would hate to be that father-in-law situation.
Could you see? Yeah, could you? I don't know why, but there's like Hell's Kitchen stuff, but there's like a thing like Gordon Ramsay in like a lunatic asylum, like in Outlast, just yelling, like cutting it into like the guys. What? What do you like, call this? Is this a burger?
Taking scissors to sever off like the fingers of the joints. Oh, what are you doing? You're messing it up.
Get your f-ing act together. I don't know what that accent was, but
it was definitely something. Yeah. I love it.
Anyway, Outlast, but yeah, with Gordon Ramsay.
Outlast with Gordon Ramsay. That's something I need to see for sure.
He's dear God.
Like he's like one of like the insane characters. So it's like his like insane energy is just like tenfold. Oh, need it. Yeah. And he's just like, he's one of the doctors, like at the, like the crazy orb with the dude in the ball projecting as the wall rider. part of what I loved about the wall rider too, is like, it was like, it came out in 2013. So that wasn't too far off the heels of the ending of Lost, and Lost had that element of like projecting like crazy images and like that brainwashing like thing with like keeping somebody like Clockwork Oranged into a chair.
Yeah.
That was like the part of the aspect of like creating the wall rider, was like they just had them in that ball, like their face like pressed against the glass, like absorbing all like this rapid span of images.
I mean, torture to say the least. Yes,
it's like mental torture. It's like programming of the mind. There's just something inherently terrifying about that.
I am curious, like, So I'm looking here, like, that the inspirations of this game.
Yeah.
I think this takes place, is it in Colorado somewhere?
Yeah, that sounds fictional. That sounds right, yeah.
So I would imagine something like The Shining could be, certainly it reminds me a little bit of that in the sense of,
oh, definitely.
Of, you know,
like, there's isolation. Obviously a more supernatural aspect to it, like a more science fiction aspect to it, but definitely.
Yeah, it's the massive asylum influenced by real life mental health facilities. So that goes back to what I'm saying, that it felt practical. The building worked in the sense of, like, you know, there's one thing I always, when I mentioned about Resident Evil before, the mansion, I'm pretty sure there's only maybe one or two bathrooms in that whole house.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always thought to my, like, years, I never noticed in the beginning, but as I've played it so many times because it's one of my favorite games, I'm like, huh, that doesn't make any sense. I feel like there should be a couple more bathrooms in this place. I feel like you'd at least have one on each floor on each side.
Yeah.
But this is a place, like, this definitely has that. It has that, like, sense of this was built, that realistic look to it. But yeah, like, it's definitely influenced by real life mental health facilities.
Well, also, like, they mentioned here, it's also big inspiration was Amnesia. I don't know if you ever played through those.
I've seen bits of Amnesia, yes.
Super interesting, like, also a great survival horror game. Like, you can definitely see the mechanical influence.
I remember when that, like, got big. I think it was my freshman year of college, or if not sophomore year. So I remember people, like, playing it.
Yeah, those were pretty wild.
But Jacob's Ladder inspired the game's aesthetic and unsettling mood. I have now I've only seen bits of Jacob's Ladder, and I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to see.
Yeah, and Red Barrels was very self-funded, kind of like a small situation. So, like, this was a big blow up for them. Like I think that they knew they had something good, but yeah. I don't think that they expected it to blow up like it did.
And to, like, the acclaim it gets for its, and you've mentioned it, the minimalist, you know, sort of gameplay mechanic. This looks like a game that you don't need. You're not getting the sometimes suffocating RPG elements that you can get in other games, which, I don't get me wrong, I love those. But even sometimes the learning curve is much easier in this one, I think, because it's more about the atmosphere and the story.
Yeah, it's just, like, everybody knows how to, like, walk through a space, which is basically what the game is. And then, like, aside from walking, it's, like, just on and offing the camera. That's basically it.
Yeah, and then that's, I think, a testament to, like I said, if you're doing the gameplay, I think it would have to definitely be in the forefront of what game you want to do along with the story. But because you saw a lot of times, you can see sometimes when someone will create a game, they're all about the story, but then the gameplay mechanics can suffer a lot. So doing
what's, like, we mentioned too, like, even some of the best games that are out there, like Last of Us, like, I remember one of your biggest barriers for getting into that was that the controls were somewhat clunky, and I always took it as that was, like, part of, like, the design of, like, adding the realism to the game, but it's, like, for you that was a bit of a barrier.
Yeah, no, that was definitely a bit of a barrier for me. Also, I think it was because the original one came out right at the tail end of the PS3's lifespan.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. And I think that was one reason. Like, I think I was still so upset with Mass Effect at the time. So I was like, I'm not playing this game, god damn it, raw. It's raw.
It's right. Oh god.
All his favorite Hell's Kitchen quotes. Come here. Look at this. What is this? What is that? I asked for medium rare. Send it back. Send it back now.
Oh my god. It's so good.
You need to get your act together. What? I don't know what accent that is. That really
I
is
don't
not
either, but
Gordon
it's fascinating. I'm just letting you go. Like, go and do it, cuz it's
No. Anyway. Yes. This is definitely, though,
this is this one has endless replayability too.
Yeah.
Cuz it, like, there's so many, like, unique circumstances. Like, even though it's, like, it's a very, like, simple, like, fairly on rails game, I still, like, it's one of those ones, like, I find new things in it. There's all kinds of, like, discoverables and letters and things you can find. And even going back through, it's, like, that rediscovery element of, like, stuff I've already seen and done. There's something to that. And it's such a short and simple game that it's not, like, a huge endeavor to get back into it. That's partly why there's few games I have, like, heavy replayability with, and this is definitely one of them.
No, yeah, which is Which is like, oh, you want to take another trip into the asylum, do you?
Yeah, like, it's not like a game that everybody would think would be super comforting. Or
well,
like,
it's, no, but yeah, but it's also that catharsis, because obviously in real life, none of us, at least I don't think any of us, would ever want to be in a situation like this.
Yeah.
But this is a way of, you know, just drama in general is a way of putting those fears into, like, you know, a safer setting to where we can, you know, express them or experience them without being physically damaged or hurt.
Yeah. And it's like Miles is not like a hero character either. He's just a dude trying to get the hell out. Like, he's trying to survive. Just a dude, man. He's just a guy. And he's just, trying to get the hell out of there. And he's not like trying to save anybody. He's not trying to like make a huge splash. He wants out and he'll use the ability to survive to expose the Murkoff Corporation.
Yeah, no,
not a hero.
Yeah, no, it's the goal is survival horror. This is definitely, I mean, I would put it in the survival horror.
And that makes it, I think that genre. Just, you know, makes it relatable because not everybody is a hero type. A lot of people just would want to get out. Like,
yeah. And that's one of the key aspects of horror and in general, but especially horror video games. They tend to put the player at the disadvantage. There's, you know, you don't necessarily get the firepower that you do in like Mario or the, you know, the souped up.
I just pictured Mario with like a Gatling gun because you said firepower.
Spewing it out.
It's just in the Predator jungle.
The Predator jungle. Gordon's,
but it's like, it's him
Gordon's
screaming.
Giving him notes on his meatballs and spaghetti.
They both have like ridiculous accents. They have like the Italian accent and then like the Gordon Ramsay British accent.
Yeah. Oh, dear God.
Yeah. There's a mental
picture. I'm starting to feel my own sanity slip here.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. We're being affected by the Wall Rider. But yeah, definitely like from a lore standpoint too, this is just a super cool world. Like there's something just really fascinating about like horror world building because it's not always like the case. It's like I can like Resident Evil games like obviously have crazy world building. This does. But it's like a lot of the times like horror tends to be a little bit more isolated in like small situation that's like not like Lord of the Rings level world building.
No, absolutely. It's because it's the focus of it. I don't want to say
they tend to be more personal to the characters.
Well, yeah, so it's like we're here to explore fear, you know.
Yeah.
And I hate this is not the right way to say it because it makes it sound like I'm denigrating it. But the complexities are stripped away to go with like we're here to talk about this. It's you know that we want to stay focused. That's the whole point.
Like for example, Misery. Takes place in basically one room the whole time. Like it's like the Stephen King Misery.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just clarifying. No, I got it.
No, I got it. Man, that was like, there was like a big, you idiot. Do you know what I'm talking about?
That's
under there.
Not what I meant.
God.
This has been one for the books this episode, I'll tell you. You too. God damn.
Well, we are talking about an asylum, so.
Yeah, I was like, if any of our horror topics so far, I think this one's deserving. Also, I didn't even bring it up. I meant to bring it up in the intro. It's our 66th episode, and we're doing it on a horror topic. I thought that was kind of cool.
All right.
So, yeah, there's that little nugget of coolness.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Like, okay, now you can say that. What's the nugget of coolness?
The fact that it was 66, episode 66.
Well, wait, is 66 mean? What? Now you can... Call me a moron. What?
Execute, like, you know, like the
oh, whole, execute like, order 60. Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, and then like, the, now you I got know, you. The, I know that it's not the 666, but it's still like evocative.
All right, that's okay. That one's a little bit of a reach, but
the satanism.
I'll give you the execute order 66 thing there.
Yeah, I don't know. There's, I'm reaching, but there's something. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I do really love survival horror games in general. This is one, like, it was cool when you pulled out Resident Evil and, like, brought forward all the passion that you had for that one. This was kind of mine of the two. This was after, you know, the bitter disappointment of being denied Silent Hills and going in on the PS4, this scratched an itch where I really wanted a good survival horror game, and there just wasn't any for a while on the PlayStation. This came out and really scratched that itch.
Fair point. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, it definitely got a ton to be dug into. Like, there's a million different little things about all the characters that they built for this game. Like, there's an immense amount of lore to be dug into. Like, it's a really cool research topic, especially from such a small independent studio. Like, they did their homework for sure.
No, absolutely.
Do you have any little Gordon Ramsay bits for the end here?
Gordon Ramsay. I'm trying to think. No, not off the top of my head. I don't.
Yeah. And just like just stalking you through like the caverns under the under the Murkoff Corporation Asylum. Just it's like, did you ever see those videos of like it's just like a single JPEG like matted onto like a Doom plane, and it's just like chasing, and like the whole thing with the game is like that pixel point will just chase you until it catches you and the game's over, but it's like you have to avoid it. It's something they'll mat the weirdest things over it, like Elmo or something weird.
Yeah.
And it's just like chasing you, and God. you're like jumping down sections, so it's like that, but it's just Gordon Ramsay like being like, oh my god, you donkey, I can't believe you. Something like that.
Oh my god,
the hammer pulled you off. Pulled you off. But it's Gordon Ramsay.
Come here. Would you serve that? No. No, absolutely you would not. The f*** out of my kitchen.
Oh, God.